Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:42 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is June 22nd. I thought we'd kick off with the Nasdaq because it tried to rally in here today, but it's finishing out the day in negative territory. And this isn't all that surprising. We can also think about the consistency of this trend down from that initial downside key day reversal in November, where we have a sequence of ranges one below the last. And we did have a breakdown about 10 sessions ago, and now we're in the region of the lower side of that overhead trading range. And this wasn't as big a breakdown as we saw in on previous occasions, but we are still seeing that resistance is encountered here at the lower side of the range. Therefore, this is still a consistent downtrend, and that is despite the fact that the Nasdaq's in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, which is a rational area where someone might think, well, it's not a bad idea to start accumulating because we've seen plenty of occasions over the course of the last decade and in any real big secular bull market where markets tend to find support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And the S&P is also in a similar place. It's right in the region of its 1,000-day moving average. So I think it's interesting to also contrast this with what's happened before, which was in 2018. I'm going to leave out 2020 because it was an exogenous factor. What we're seeing right now is quite similar to what we saw in 2018. The Federal Reserve was worried about rampant government spending, huge deficits, and there was very strong economic growth. They were worried about inflation potentially taking off, but there wasn't a lot of evidence to suggest that. So they were hiking rates and they were reducing the size of their balance sheet. We had a 10% pullback at the beginning of the year, and then we had a 20% pullback at the end of the year. And the stock market got all the way down to test that 1,000-day moving average. They pulled out the plunge protection team. Steve Mnuchin had a meeting with all the CEOs of the big banks. The Federal Reserve stopped raising rates in January. They were cutting rates by the middle of the year. The stock market rebounded, and we also had an inverted yield curve later on in 2019. So the market then was pricing in a recession to begin sometime in 2020. And of course, then we had the pandemic and the massive acceleration of monetary accommodation. Right now, we're in a similar position where the Federal Reserve is raising rates and doing so aggressively, and they're beginning to reduce the size of their balance sheet. But this time, it's not a threat of inflation. We have inflation. So they aren't going to be in a position to pull in the plunge protection team. They're not going to be in a position to start to cut rates until they have a reason to. Now, that reason could quite easily be a recession. And you had Jay Powell testifying to the Senate in here today. It was almost laughable how partisan the questioning was. But the reality is, he had two things to say. The first is that they were going to persist in raising rates. And the second was that it was going to be very difficult to achieve a soft landing. So we're basically looking at the absolute surety that there will be a recession. And until there's a recession, until they break something, then they're going to continue tightening. So anyone then looking at the 1,000-day moving average and the magnitude of the decline so far and thinking that this is the bottom, well, you can't have a big rebound until there's clear evidence of liquidity to fuel it. So then we're also starting to see some of the sectors that had led on the upside and had provided relative strength in the early part of the year rolling over. Copper is one of those. It's down 10 cents today. It's breaking through the $4 level. This is a completed top formation. So the surprises are now likely to be on the downside. And we can also then think about oil prices, because it's one thing to see one commodity breaking lower, but Crude oil was also down in here today, and it's following through on the downward dynamic that we saw last week. Now it's off the lows, so we might yet see some additional pause and consolidation around this area, but oil isn't breaking on the upside. Now let's go back and think about the wider industrial metal sector. And the LME Metals Index has clearly broken down through the 200-day moving average, and it's encountering resistance in the region of it. And it was in mildly positive territory yesterday. When it's updated in here today, it's going to be breaking on the downside. Nickel prices were leading on the downside in here today. So this is a really significant decline, particularly in view of the big spike that we had at the beginning of the year, which accompanied some of the bankruptcies of nickel producers in, or I guess not, perhaps not bankruptcies, but exceptionally difficult liquidity conditions experienced by nickel producers in China. But the price now is pulling back through the 200-day moving average. So then we can think about some of the steel producers who are very attuned to economic growth. So ArcelorMittal has now broken downwards, and this is encountering resistance at the upper side of what's a more than decade-long range. And it could potentially have broken on the upside, but we just have not seen the follow-through on outsized infrastructure development. So that's one of the larger steel producers. If we look at US steel, then it's also been down in a really dynamic manner and also encountering resistance in the region of the upper side of the base formation over the course of the last month. And this isn't just because of energy prices, but it's clearly some very clear selling pressure because people are wondering now about the sustainability of the infrastructure build that was promised in the aftermath of the pandemic, and then also about global demand if we get a recession. So these are, I think, significant factors. But also, these are highly cyclical. And when commodities start rolling over, then it's usually right at the end of an economic expansion. So usually you get a really strong run in commodities because interest rates are beginning to rise, but they haven't yet start to in or I guess impede economic expansion. The more interest rates rise, the greater the likelihood is that they will impede economic expansion. Then that's when commodities eventually roll over. So that's what we're seeing right now, and it would suggest, therefore, that we are a lot closer to a recession than I think the majority of people are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to. Now, that's because they are still looking at things like the 10-year and 3-month spread, and it is starting to contract, and it's down to about 1.6%, 160 basis points, and that's a long way from being inverted. But of course, the yield curve spread looked at as a difference between the 10-year and the 2-year was inverted twice already, and it's still only at around 10 basis points. I think one thing that's that perhaps economists aren't really willing to consider is if we just think about the stock market, we had the steep drawdown, we had the big pullback, and the big advance. Then we had another steep pullback. So we're getting enhanced volatility because of the market jolting from one extreme to the other as things begin to settle down after the pandemic and all of the upset that we've all experienced over the last couple of years, which means that it's quite likely that we're going to lurch from expansion to contraction and back again for at least the next few years. as inflationary pressures ebb and flow, and the global supply chain readjusts to the new reality. So I think these are certainly potential outcomes, and we're going to find out in a week because the GDP figure is going to be released on the 29th. And well, we had a negative 1.5% growth rate quarter over quarter for the first quarter, and it could easily be negative again in this quarter. And considering how high energy prices are and how much food price inflation we've had, well, it's not unreasonable to anticipate that consumers are experiencing a great deal of stress. And didn't retailers, they haven't really been able to bounce. So Amazon, it bounced for a day and then it was off its highs again in here. So still struggling to do anything other than pause here around the psychological $100 area. And then Apple, having held out best among the Fang Man shares, well, it's clearly broken down through the 200-day moving average, a little steadier over the last 2 days, but still finishing out the day in negative territory. Even Tesla, having led on the upside yesterday, is in negative territory today, not able to hold on to the advance. And if we then just think about Bitcoin as a liquidity barometer. Well, we had a deep pullback on Saturday, a rebound on Sunday, and a little bit steadier trading yesterday, but it hasn't held. And the price is coming back down towards this psychological 20,000 level. Now, if it breaks down again, well, that's going to be a lead indicator for further weakness in the stock market. And this has been a really very consistent downtrend. And there's nothing on the chart to say that it is, in fact, yet over. So this also helps to very clearly highlight that Bitcoin's a liquidity play rather than any other additional factor. And I think it also helps to highlight that there's a lot of promises made in bull markets. And in secular bull markets, those promises are they do come true. But it doesn't mean that the price has to stay elevated. And we've seen that on multiple occasions over the years, where you get these beautiful big promises made during the expansion phase, and the market's a discounting mechanism, so it prices in all of the upside potential very quickly. And the commercialization technology takes time to come to full fruition. And in between, you can have massive bull and bear markets. And I suspect that's exactly what we're looking at in the cryptocurrency world. The evolution of decentralized ledgers is certainly something that's worthy of consideration as being a potentially fruitful way of dealing with transactions. But that does not mean that we have to be paying $20,000 for a Bitcoin. So I really do think that one of the biggest problems with Web 3.0 is that it's basically attempting to charge us for everything that we used to get for free. And that's not much of a, well, that's not enticing. And the vast majority of accounts that are active in cryptocurrencies, it's not because they're doing transactions. It's simply because they're speculating. And the vast majority of people who are buying crypto are doing so because they want to make money. And that's no different from any other financial asset. So then when we think about what's going on in the wider world, well, bond yields on the long end of the curve are starting to come back down. And the dollar index is pausing here at the upper side of the range. There's been a very clear correlation between the performance of the dollar and the long end of the curve. And 10-year yields were down in here today by 13 basis points. So there's the potential, at least, that we're going to see a failure to sustain this break above 3%. We've had an exceptionally swift move higher. Now, I don't think that anyone's yet willing to believe that bond yields are going to go all the way back down to 50 basis points, but they could easily come back to 2.25. That would be a meaningful contraction. It would be something that investors would then start to question whether there is going to be inflation, and we'd instead start to think about whether deflation is going to take over. Because if we go into a recession and the consumer has a setback and unemployment starts to rise, well, then central banks aren't going to be in a position to continue to raise rates. They're going to use any kind of evidence that they could possibly find to say that the inflation genie has been slain, and now we're got more concerns about a contracting economy, so we're going to start providing additional liquidity again. It's, I think, going to be quite likely that that is the base case, but that's not going to put the genie of inflation back in the bottle. And we have restive populations. We have labor unions that are becoming progressively more restive as well. And we're getting outsized wage demands. So the rail workers in the UK are striking. In Germany, you're also looking at unions asking for a 10% pay rise. And this is turning into something of a global phenomenon. So but that is also emblematic of what we see in the latter stages of an economic expansion. People do get worried about inflation. Interest rates go up, they kill off inflation. And then we see people worrying about deflation. What I think is really funny is if you look at the baseline estimate for what a Taylor rule would suggest interest rates should be, well, we're at 9.77%, which is really ridiculous. So there's just no way the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates like that. But what it also suggests is that perhaps this is just wrong, and the neutral rate is a lot lower than the bond market is considering. Maybe the neutral rate is 3%. And we're already in restrictive territory because the shadow banking or the Wuxia shadow banking index was updated, and now we're in restrictive territory. It's back above zero. And sorry, this Bloomberg one hasn't been updated. I saw it somewhere else where it had been updated for the interest rate hikes that we've already had, and it's well in excess of the peak that was put in back in 2018. So we're already really quite restrictive, and financial conditions have tightened up a lot. Now, what we can also see here is that until quite recently, if the estimate of what this is going to be updated to is correct and the peak is higher right now, then the downtrend's been broken. And we've already got a higher reaction low. So if the shadow banking sector or the shadow banking measure has been trending downwards, and now we have a higher reaction low and we're going to have a higher high, that's a new uptrend. And it would suggest then that the low is potentially in for yields, and we're not going to go back down to 50 basis points, but that we will have a contraction in government bond yields that's meaningful. It'll give the illusion that inflation is under control, but subsequently it'll come roaring back during the next expansion. And obviously, then that's going to be problematic in terms of interest rates. So bull markets don't end overnight. The bottoming process is going to be going to take some time, and we've had meaningful breakouts. So that's basically completed base formations. It's definitely completed a base formation for UK gilts. The fact that German bonds are back above zero and trending higher. then this is very clearly a signal that the trend has changed, because it pops out as a really meaningful move, even if you look at it on a 30-year time basis. So this is a very clear break of the trend, but it's really oversold. So even if the inflation trend has changed, even if the secular bull market in bonds is over, it doesn't mean that we can't have occasional rallies. And I suspect that that is what we're looking at, that we're going to have a rally in bonds. And that will also contribute to the inversion of the difference between the 10-year and the 3-month. Well, if bond yields start to come back down, then that will rob the dollar of some of its impetus. And gold today was, would it fail to hold all of the move? It's very hard for gold to rally when copper is coming down so heavily. But then when we think about that in terms of the copper gold ratio, the fact that copper is coming down so heavily and gold is steady, it's pulling back from the lower side, from the upper side of the range, and suggesting therefore that bond yields could easily come down from here. So when we look at the longer end of the curve and the TLT ETF, well, this is an upward dynamic. It's not the first one. We've had upward dynamics in the past. They only lasted for 3 weeks and then rolled over. But and it's still a reasonably consistent trend. We still have a sequence of ranges, one below the last. So it's going to have to follow through on the upside to push up into this overhead range. But it's been coming down now for a while. And we're in the region of lows seen over the course of the last decade. So it's not an irrational place to anticipate that some support would come through and we might get a reversion back towards the 200-day moving average. I'm rather doubtful that it's going to go much further than that, but it could easily do that. And then, of course, that's going to be in response to a recession. So bonds would normally be the asset class that would do well in that environment as investors begin to peg back their expectations for future inflation. Of course, we're still in an environment where there's a lot of questioning about property in particular because of the exposure that a lot of the more successful economies that came through the global financial crisis and now find themselves with exceptionally high property prices. Australia is certainly one of those places, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne. New Zealand has not only came through the global financial crisis well, but came through the pandemic well. And there was a huge jump in property prices there as well. So if we are at a point where yields are bottoming and we're going to have potentially a first step above the base form, but before yields then break out again, well, it would suggest that some of these exceptionally highly priced markets are going to have more difficult times in future. This, of course, is going to be dependent on just how much of a hike in interest rates happens domestically. And home builders pulled back exceptionally violently, and then they're now starting to rebound. But this is going to be very much attuned to what happens with interest rates, because the mortgage rate has doubled this year. So that's obviously going to curtail demand for houses, but also then curtail the ability to build them. So we haven't had a big supply response either. And that's also feeds through into the reality that property generally does offer a hedge against inflationary pressures. So, probably more likely to offer a hedge in less highly priced markets, but still, it's all about location and about supply. And until we have a big supply response, we're unlikely to have a crash in housing prices. The Hang Seng was in negative territory today. So it's been trying to steady. And the credit impulse in China has turned higher. And you would think that that would begin to offer support. And there's certainly been an argument that it would begin to offer support. And we had news out of China that Alibaba, for example, or at least Ant Financial, has been granted permission that they're going to be able to apply for a financial license. But it's going to be under exceptionally strict rules. So they're not going to be able to expand. The growth of the company has been cut off at the knees. So China might be providing stimulus, but they're very reluctant to fire up asset prices the way they have in the past. And that's problematic for the global economy, because until we see a clear movement by a major economy to flood the market with liquidity, well, it's going to be more difficult for the liquidity-dependent portions of the market to rebound. So we're still in a medium-term corrective phase, and we haven't seen yet the kind of activity necessary to suggest that it's over. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.